Tuesday, December 13th, and this is Geek Nights. Tonight we talk about Moiterer, Nanostray, and more.
Let's do this.
Man, today was a painful day at work.
My day was pretty much the same boring day as the other days, only it was a little slower than yesterday.
See, my day would have been just boring, but it was actually painful because I had to go to a large meeting and I learned something profound and scary.
Well, so, meetings tend to be scary, so I don't go to them.
Well, this was a special meeting. Now, first off, I can't talk about the specific details because it was a confidential meeting, and I generally can't talk about a lot of the things I do at work. And I can't talk about who was involved or who gave this meeting or whatever. But I think I can get away with talking about what I'm about to talk about.
All right.
So I went to this meeting, and it was like this division-wide meeting. So a lot of people were there. This was a major meeting. More of a presentation than a meeting, where someone was going to present us a whole bunch of important information about IBM. All right, cool. I get the morning off to go to this meeting. They give us lunch afterward. So I show up, and the people giving the presentation are pretty much walking into the room right before I am, and I'm about 2 minutes early. They walk to the front of the room, and they're ready to go, and, oh, none of the equipment in the room's working.
I've never seen that happen before.
Yeah. And instead of just immediately dealing with the situation, they just kind of stood there, twiddled their thumbs, looked at each other a lot, and after a significant time, decided to do the meeting without any of the equipment.
Why didn't they call ETC?
Because it wasn't RIT.
Don't they have an ETC equivalent?
I don't know. I've never had to coordinate a room.
All right.
All I know is that they did not... It was one of the most unprofessional and painful to watch things I have ever seen. And that includes classes I've been had people do presentations at in RIT.
Yeah, see, usually when that happens, like when it happened at RIT, I would laugh at it for like a minute. You know, maybe I'd yell out some advice or something if I felt like it. But I wouldn't actually get up and fix it unless it got really bad. Then I would just get up and fix it with like, doop, there it is.
Yeah. You know? Now, the fact that a meeting went like that isn't really the point of this. The point is that these were professionals. These are professional business people who are paid a lot of money to do their business thing and to act as professional-type people. And they did this in the most unprofessional, just cockamamie... It was painful to watch. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that I personally... And other people I've known who ran a freaking club in college handled our club in a more professional manner than this meeting was conducted.
It's pretty sad.
I mean, we would get to the room if we were doing a presentation, I don't know, half hour, hour early, check out the room, make sure it worked. If it didn't work, we called someone to fix it. If there was an emergency, you know, a microphone didn't work, we handled it in a professional manner and got it resolved as quickly as possible without, and we always had it appear smooth. We didn't just stand at the front of the room twiddling our thumbs. And It bothers me because we had a lot of... Every class we had at RIT, they made us do presentations in groups in front of the class. And they always impressed upon us that you have to be professional in the real world. Classes may not seem, but we're training you for the real world. You got to act like professionals. They always use the word professional. You know, have two laptops if you're going to do a PowerPoint in case one doesn't work. Have printed out things just in case you can't use the projector. Always be prepared for the worst case scenario. And they would grade you badly if you didn't. If you came in and the laptop didn't work, you failed.
That's what it should be.
But now I get to the real world, and now it doesn't matter. It's just as unprofessional in the real world as it was in college. In fact, college was in many cases more rigorous, and I was held to a higher standard there than I am now that I work.
Well, I can't say that my work is more professional than what they force you to do in college, but I think from what I've seen, and I don't see much, mind you, just sitting at my desk, that at least the people where I work try to be more professional, or at least when they're not professional, they know it and they feel bad. Like, I remember once someone was giving a software demo using GoToAssist, you know, and it turned out that the license thing was messed up and only so many people could connect, and they tried to get more people to connect, and they were like, oh my god, I look like an idiot, oh my god, oh my god. You know, like, they knew, which me, you know, and usually when people do things, especially when involving a customer or something, they try to be really professional. When they do kind of internal things, they don't seem to care so much, they just kind of talk like normal people.
Yeah.
But whenever it's something with a customer or another business or outsiders, unless, you know, they get buddy-buddy with them over time, I definitely see some sort of professional effort despite, you know, however the talent of being professional of the particular person or persons may be.
See, I guess it's just, I mean, I'm not really picking on the company I work for because I've noticed it pretty much in every company I've worked for and every company I've dealt with. And even when I interviewed with companies, it just seems like most people who are out there in the real world getting paid to do a job are just the most unprofessional, unprepared, unable to cope with any sort of difficulty people in the world.
Yeah, that's people.
And it kind of frightens and saddens me.
Well, it's because, you know, because people are business people, you kind of get this idea like, oh, he's a business person. But really, business people are just the same stupid people as everyone else.
But how hard is it to at least take something and do it in a professional manner? Well, I'd say that our podcast...
It's real hard if you don't give two shits.
But I mean, look at this show right here. We're doing this pretty much as professionally as we have the means to do. We got nice equipment. We do it regularly. We got little microphones.
Yeah, it's because this is something we want to do, and for no other reason than we want to do it. Imagine if this was like a chore, it felt like a chore, and someone was paying us to do it, and we didn't really care about how it turned out. We're doing it just because we're kind of forced to, we do it every day, and it's blah. You wouldn't put as much effort into it or as much care. You would let things slip by, and you wouldn't feel bad if it messed up. You'd just be like, oh, I still get paid, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, part of it is the things people want to do aren't things you can get paid for, and it's hard to get jobs that you can really be prideful about.
Yep, especially if you have no talents and no interests.
Yeah, though it's even worse for us. We have talents and interests. There's no way to get into a lot of jobs.
There is. We just need
money, power, ins.
Ins. We need some ins.
Yeah, we need some ins.
All up ons. All right.
All right. So anyway, now that I'm done ranting about that, because I've been snippy about that all day, I came home and I was in a swearing mood because I just couldn't believe what I had just seen at work.
You should have videotaped it.
Yeah. God. There's a recording of it somewhere.
Dude, that should be hilarious.
There's no way I could ever play it because once we actually got the conference going, it went really well, and it was a lot of cool, like, insider-type information I can't talk about. But IBM pretty much, and I can say this because this is definitely true, IBM pretty much said that all the problems with the Xbox 360 have nothing to do with their chips. It's all Microsoft's ball.
Of course.
Our chips are fine.
Duh.
So on to some actual good news. Verizon hates the telemarketers as much as you do.
Well, it costs them a lot of money.
Yeah. Oh, not even that. Customer service-wise, if they take a stance against telemarketers, which doesn't really cost them anything, not only do they get money out of the telemarketers who break the laws, but their customers are real happy. A lot of goodwill.
Yep. Definitely a good move on Verizon. I'm wondering why no phone companies have done this before. I mean...
Well, Verizon's only targeting telemarketers who attack their cell phones.
Ah.
Because that's the only people they can target.
Yeah. But I mean, imagine it back in the day, someone said, you know, when we had landline phones and telemarketing was rampant and terrible. If someone said, use our phone service, who cares about a stupid dime a minute, nickel a minute, whatever. They said, we'll make sure that, you know, telemarketers don't get you.
Yeah, well, they
would have gotten
big
monies.
A lot of phone companies sell various telemarketer blocking things.
Those don't actually work, I imagine.
Well, you know what works real well? A, having a cell phone, or B, being on the do not call list.
Do not call list. All right.
Now, the reason the Verizon thing works is basically there's actually a federal law that telemarketers cannot call your cell phone ever.
Are you sure? Because absolutely?
Absolutely. Unless they have an actual prior business relationship. And if they call you on a cell phone and they actually do have a legitimate relationship and you tell them never to call you again, they cannot call you ever again unless you reopen the business relationship.
But do you have to close the business relationship, though?
You can just tell them not to call you.
No, what if they have... But, like, can you tell them, call me if this, but don't call me if that?
Depends on the company, but basically they don't have to accommodate you in that sense.
Yeah.
But even if they call you, they can't call you for promotional reasons.
Yeah, because I'd like Cablevision to not call me for promotional reasons, which is what they do.
They do? Well, yell at them.
But, I do want them to call me if there's something wrong with my Cablevision.
Tell them to never call you for a promotional reason.
All right. I'll do it next time.
And if any of you out there ever get a telemarketer on your cell phone, it's against the law. Nail them to the wall. You can sue them for money if you're really that inclined.
Yeah, and if you have a landline phone, why?
What are you thinking?
What are you doing with that?
I mean, the cheapest landline we could get here costs about the same as a cheap cell phone plan and doesn't include long distance or anything.
And it can't leave my house.
Yeah, and telemarketers can call it.
It's pretty much bad all around.
Yeah, even if you're on the do not call list, they can telemarketers can call you as long as they pretend to be a charity or a survey.
Or politics.
Yeah, politics. Though the Republicans called me before the election on my cell phone, and they're not allowed to do that.
Uh-huh.
I called them back and left a nasty voicemail.
But did they ever get back to you?
No, they never got back. But to be fair, the Democrats also called me, and I also sent them a nasty voicemail.
Yeah.
In fact, I sent them almost identical voicemails.
They probably found your phone number on some paper somewhere.
Yeah. But the other really cool thing about this is that Verizon sued, and they got like $20,000 out of one of these telemarketing companies.
Awesome.
They donated it to charity.
Oh.
Yeah.
There you go.
So, I mean, I generally dislike Verizon cell phone service, but not any more than I dislike every other cell phone service in the U.S.
I only have a problem with Verizon with their locking down of phones, but everyone locks down the freaking phones.
Yeah.
So.
But plus one for Verizon. I'm slightly pleased with you as a corporation.
Yep.
Bravo.
Mm-hmm. I guess you need to do something to separate yourself from the competition when you don't want to break the business model.
Yeah, yeah.
So on the no mailing list, some guy was complaining that like some certain printer options don't appear in a dialog box.
Now, just for those of you who may not be Linuxly inclined, GNOME and KDE are the two main window manager / desktop environments that are used in Linux.
Yeah, those
they're basically like the big overarching GUI.
Yep. Okay. Anyway, so the GNOME printing dialog, it doesn't have these options in it. And some guy was like, yeah, that's because the GNOME guys don't want to put it there because it's confusing to people who don't know what they're doing. And Linus Torvalds, the Linux guy, says he doesn't like that. He says that the users are idiots and are confused by functionality mentality. So he doesn't actually say the users are idiots. He says the mentality of the users being idiots is a disease. And that if you think your users are idiots, only idiots will use your program.
Now, this sparked a flame war on Slashdot.
Yeah, he basically said, don't use GNOME because it gets rid of all these options to make things easy for idiots. And it makes it impossible for him to do things because when you remove the things to make it easier for idiots, you remove the possibility to do things that he needs to do.
Now, so I agree with him there generally because I really like to have all the options available to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I still use GNOME because, honestly, for very little effort, GNOME looks very pretty and very functional very quickly.
Yep. And the other thing is I'd like to know if Linus uses Firefox because Firefox definitely has the users are idiots and are confused by functionality mentality. I mean, every freaking Firefox upgrade, they remove things from the options menu.
Yep, or they at least hide them away under that advanced tab.
Yeah, if you go to about config, that's where they hide the advanced stuff, you know? They make it so that nothing is impossible, but they make everything that's not, you know, meant for the user hidden away, and they make it as simple as possible, which is really good. I mean, you know, setting a default as opposed to having the user pick an option is great for your program, especially if you choose the right default, because, you know, a lot of times, you know, they just say, oh, we don't know which one to pick for the default, or just give the user the option. And then you end up having the KDE, which I don't like because, sure, you can do anything, but it's basically just a sea of checkboxes, and you have no idea what any of them do.
Yep.
You know, the checkbox you want is in there somewhere, but it's impossible to figure out where the heck it is.
See, we have two different rationales. Scott cares a lot about the functionality, and I just don't like the way KDE looks without a lot of effort into making it look and feel differently.
Yeah.
GNOME, I just like the look and feel.
And the other thing is, even if you use GNOME, sure, there are things that won't appear in the GUI, and they're kind of hard to do.
You still have a terminal.
You can still go to the terminal and do them. No one's stopping you.
While I have a GUI, and I have a grand total of 5 icons total that can do anything. I have Firefox, GAIM, a button that opens my MP3 folder, Steam, I don't know why, because it doesn't work, and Azurius.
Well, at least Linus Torvalds, it looks like he has the, you know, do things the real way, you know, kind of philosophy a little bit, but at least he doesn't have the do everything in the terminal, X is for losers,
yeah,
kind of, you know, thing going on.
Because, I mean, it's one thing to be an, like, super advanced Linux user where you use, like, rat poison and you do crazy things.
Mm.
But there are a lot of Linux developers out there who not only believe that everyone should only use the terminal command line, but they get actually pissed if people take hard-to-use applications and make them easier to use.
Yep.
Like, I'm not kidding. These people are kind of scary.
Very scary, guys. I remember I talked to one once, and he's like, we shouldn't make a GUI installer for Gentoo, right? And I'm like, well, why not? I'm like, we're not forcing you to use it. I mean, if we were forcing you to use it and get rid of the normal install method, that would be a problem, but we're still keeping the old install method. We're just adding a GUI one. And the only argument he could come up with that was even close to rational was that the developers working on that could have been working on something else. And I was like, well, you know what? Since they're not being paid,
that's
they
like
decide
saying,
what they want to work on.
That's like
that's
saying, why are you
do.
Riding your bike? You could be researching cancer.
Yep.
Why are you going to the mall? You could be helping starving orphans in Africa.
Mm.
Yeah, you could, but it's not going to happen.
Nope. And I think like 90% of the problems in this world is people not minding their own business and caring what other people do.
Yeah.
Don't care what other people do. If they're not you, fuck them.
Unless it hurts you or hurts other people, then you should care.
Yeah, and don't imagine it hurts you just because it bothers you. If it bothers you, that's probably because the other person is doing something that you want to do or they have an ability you don't have or you're jealous. 90% of the time, if something someone else does bothers you, it's because you are jealous of them. And if you accept it, you'll be a lot better off.
Though, not always. I mean, if there's a Nazi doing his Nazi stuff,
oh, well, yeah,
legitimately
yeah, yeah.
bothered by that. But
yeah, but then he's harming himself and or others,
yeah.
you know? And
now,
if
see,
it's and if it's an, seriously, I'm a Jew, kind of, and if there's a Nazi and he's doing his Nazi stuff, but he's not hurting anyone, he's just yelling his Nazi yells and such and marching his Nazi marches, that doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah, because, I mean, even the Supreme Court agrees that freedom of speech carries a large risk, and despite that, we have to accept that risk in order to have a free society.
Yeah, if someone's, you know, yelling Nazi stuff, I'm not going to be his friend, but I'm not going to make him stop, and it doesn't bother me, and I don't care if he does it or not.
Yeah.
I only care if he starts, you know, his own little furnace. Then I'll care, and they'll put him in jail.
Yeah.
So, you know, while I might think that, you know, doing everything in Ion is the hottest thing since sliced bread, if you don't think so, I don't freaking care. You know, I might say, wow, you're dumb, especially if I'm obviously right, and that it's poo on you, and I might try to help you realize why my way is better. Just because I want to help you out, but it's not going to bother me if you don't. I'll just be like, sucks to be you if you don't want to listen. I'm trying to help you out, man.
Yeah, that's why I don't get, I mean, on Slashdot, the flame war that I mentioned earlier, there are a lot of people who seem to be almost angry that other people use a different program.
Yep.
I mean, people who use GNOME yell, and there's these posts where people are like, wow, people who use KDE, I hate it, I can't stand it, blah, 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 blah. And just, why? You don't have to care. Get out of your mom's basement.
Yep.
We're two really big Linux geeks, but damn, just let it go.
I don't know what it is. I think it's similar to the thing I wrote about in my blog a long time ago, how, like, someone would like, one of my sister's friends liked Cowboy Bebop, because everyone likes Cowboy Bebop. But then she was like, yeah, it's not so good anymore. Now it's all mainstream and everyone likes it. And I'm like, what? So somehow the show changed because other people are watching it?
Yeah, one more guy found out about it and downloaded it and suddenly it's not good anymore?
That tells me that you don't actually like it because of it, that you just like liking it. You know, you like being the person who you know, likes things that no one else likes. You want to be different.
Gotta watch out for those likes. They take your shield.
Yeah, definitely take the shield.
Bastards.
Defense is down. Oh no! Inner emotions exposed! Alright, I had a thing of the day, but the link died.
Oh!
It's like another thing of the day that it's not as good, but it's alright.
So, what is it?
Well, someone's made little arts and craft and they're selling it on eBay.
Just one? So it's a unique, like, one-of-a-kind thing?
Actually, I didn't read. I think it is. Yeah, this is a one-of-a-kind art piece.
How much is it going for? Because I saw it, and it's kind of cute. And the problem is, it's a product that while I would buy it, I have no use for it because I do not have the thing that it is used with.
Yeah, it's currently at $20.50. The reserve has been met. And there are 8 bids already.
Well, I guess I could use it as, like, the equivalent of a glove.
Yeah, the auction ends in 2 days, 15 hours.
Because I get a little chilly down there sometimes.
Yep, and the item is a Cthulhu dildo cozy.
Yeah, so if you were looking for a dildo cozy and you like Cthulhu...
It's actually really good. It's made of like this green, and it's got little wingalings and little tentaclings and little red eyeballs, and it fits right on that dildo there. And I think that's probably the best dildo cathosi in the world.
Wow.
Oh, wait. These are, oh my God, it's from the people who previously bought the Flying Spaghetti Monster dildo cozy.
I think I see a trend of the types of products they develop.
The Flying Spaghetti Monster dildo cozy is not as good as the Cthulhu dildo cozy.
All right.
I wonder what's next.
So if any of you end up buying that thing, you got to send us a picture of it in action somehow.
I don't think anyone who listens to this is going to be the guy who wins the auction.
No. And honestly, I
don't want to see the guy who wins the auction.
I don't want to see the possible action shots we might get of a dildo cozy.
Yeah.
So my thing of the day is completely not at all related to that.
It's basically not dildo related?
For those of you who know me well,
I'm going to work in a dildo.
I'm not a history buff in the sense of I like study history, but I'm really fascinated with like old
dildos.
Photos and old just sort of ways to look at the past or look at like old writing, graffiti on walls from a long time ago. And there's just this cool archive that the Library of Congress put up of color photographs and color slides from the early 1940s in the U.S.
That's so old, man.
Yeah.
I saw that weeks ago.
It was linked to on FARC today, and I saw it, and I thought it was really cool.
It is pretty cool.
So that's my thing of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Just a bunch of pictures of Americans doing their thing.
There's actually a related thing I saw where someone made a program that could easily colorize black and white photos.
There are actually a lot of various filters and methods to do that.
Yeah, but this is like you don't even have to know Photoshop. You literally pick a color and you draw a squiggle. You just kind of squiggle in the area where that color goes, just like kind of shoddily.
Yeah.
And then you click go and it will go. And there are special plugins. Like you just click sky and then you go weeka 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 and then click go and it puts the sky in.
You know, there's a lot of stuff like that. How do you think Ted Turner colorized every black and white movie ever?
With a lot of money and a team of people and a lot of programs and computers and...
Yeah, a lot of programs that automated most of the work.
Well, this one's really simple and free and happy.
Yeah, simple and free is definitely key.
Yeah. Anyway.
So it's video game day, and, well, not just video game day, it's actually
game day. Game day.
It's just we tend to do video games a lot, since we don't get to play as many board games as we'd like to anymore.
Or not any role-playing games at all.
Yeah, we're playing that online D&D game still, but you don't want to hear about that.
No, what are the... I guess those are all the kinds of games that anyone wants to play these days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But we finally played Moiterer.
Oh, Moiterer, an excellent game.
I like it at least twice as much as I like Verator.
I don't know, I like Verator more than you, but I do like Moiterer more than Verator, but I think it's not that Moiterer is really better, it's that Verator is worse. It's only worse, though, because of the Gustav Kantor mechanic. I don't like that. I think that really brings Verator down, and I think if they did something else in Verator to replace that mechanic, that I would actually like that game better, because I like the whole, like... Haha, I'm verating is like a lot more forceful. And in Moiterer, when you're moitering, it's like, all right, someone picked the Moiterer, you know?
Yep.
In Verator, it's like, oh my God, he picked the Verator, what the heck?
Well, I guess it's also in Verator, you have your supply of cards in your hand, and it's very difficult to get more cards into your hand.
Yeah, that's so the whole Gustav Kantor.
I'm just kind of explaining it for all the people who haven't played this game or don't speak German.
Oh.
But basically, you have your hand, and you have to use cards in your hand to accomplish anything. But then your hand runs out, and the only way to get things back into your hand is it forces you to either wait or take a stupid action that just doesn't let you do anything that round, basically. And everyone has to do that. So the game keeps forcing you. You have to keep worrying about this thing that's not fun, and it's just kind of a chore to fill your hand back up.
Mm.
In Verator, the hand just always fills back up.
Moiterer, the hand always fills back up.
Oh, yeah, in Moiterer. Just fills back up, and you can focus on the more fun mechanics of the game, like being the mutineer or piloting the ship. or trading the goods in port, or telling the pirate to come and get you.
Yeah, but you know what's funny is in the second game of Moidori we played where I won, I actually chose the Loadmeister like two or three times, and all he does is let you have a little more choice in when you draw back up to five, because everyone draws back up to five cards. And no matter what, you're going to have five cards each round, but the Loadmeister lets you draw three extras in addition to what you normally drew. And then that way you can kind of choose what you get to put in your hand,
which
as
is
opposed
key.
To getting randomness. And that helped a whole hell of a lot.
Whereas this game is most games, like this game is very much a difference of one means a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Having one more card than someone is just insane.
I mean, in Verator, it's pretty much all the cards in the game are for fighting. You know, it's the bigger numbers fight big and the smaller numbers fight small. And, you know, you get the Gustavs, which let you draw more cards. And those kind of mean a lot, but they kind of don't. It's like they mean a lot over a long time, but if you lose one for a turn, it's all right. You know, but it's just number of cards in Verator and luck of getting big cards. In Moiterer, there's only six cards that are for fighting, and all of them count as one. You know, and usually you don't see a whole bunch of them out there. You know, it's like if there's a fight, you'll see maybe three of these things. And, like, someone just picking the mate counts as one automatically. And that's freaking huge. That's like a 1/6 advantage just for doing nothing.
And there's two mechanics in Moiterer that I really, really like. One, if you're the captain, you basically get to pick your bribe for someone to be your mate. It's how many victory points of yours you'll give to whoever picks the mate card to help you fight off a mutiny.
Mm-hmm.
So depending on how confident you are or how bluff-worthy you are, you can offer a lot or offer none, and I think that's really neat. Two, you can play conflict cards during the conflict. Or, like, basically what it does, you go around one card at a time, and everyone plays a good. And then when you don't want to play any more goods, you say, I'm out, and you pick an action card based on whatever's left in the action card pile, and no one else knows what you picked. So you can also lay out conflict cards during the good phase. So you could be like, it comes around, and you lay a took, or a piece of cloth down. Comes around, you lay another took. Then it comes around, you lay a conflict card. That's basically saying, yeah, don't fuck with me, I'll win a conflict.
Yeah, because that's already 1/6 of the conflict cards in the whole game. Are out in front of you where everyone can see. They're going, damn, if we try to fight against him, then we're probably not going to win.
But the thing is, if he's not the captain, you don't know what side that guy's going to be on necessarily.
Well, the thing I like about the game most is in Verator, you can kind of guess what roles other people have. I mean,
we guessed it with 100% accuracy when we played, but it was 3-player and it was kind of obvious.
Yeah, because in Verator, there's 6 roles. And the first person takes one of them and throws them out. And that role can't be chosen. So the first person at least knows no one has that role, right? Then he takes a role for himself. The second person in Verator knows that 2 roles are missing and that the first player is one of those 2 roles. But he doesn't know which one. And then he takes a role. The third player knows that there are 3 roles missing and the first and second player are 2 of them. And so on. And the final player has, you know, all the remaining roles, which he keeps one of, and throws out the rest. So, you know, the second to last player knows he's one of those ones I gave him. You know, he doesn't know which one. So it's kind of like different people know different stuff. In Moiterer, the captain doesn't know crap.
It's real scary to be the captain. Like, you're looking at your crew. Imagine you're on a ship, and you're standing there, and you're looking at your crew, and they're looking back at you, and you don't know if one of them's going to betray you, or... It's scary.
Because when the captain is done putting out his goods, he doesn't take an action card like everyone else. He's already the captain. That's his action. He just puts the little ship where it's going to go, the marker where the ship is going to go to if he wins. If there is a fight, even. Because if there's no fight, the captain wins automatically.
Yep.
I have hiccups. But everyone else, the first person to finish who's not the captain, takes an action card. The second person knows exactly what the first person took because it's the only action card missing. And the third person, if there is a fourth player, knows 2 action cards are missing and the other 2 players are those 2 action cards.
So you might be the third player and you look and someone took the Moiterer.
Yeah.
Now you don't know who took it.
Yeah, is it the guy you think is going to win, or is it the guy you think is going to lose? Do you think that if you took the mate, you could help the captain win, or is the mate already taken?
Or do you want the captain to win?
Yeah, is the captain taking the boat somewhere where you're going to make out good? Or is the captain going to take, or is the Moiterer going to take the boat somewhere better? You don't know.
It's just nerve-wracking. I remember one instance, I was the captain, and Wyatt, a friend of ours, laid down like two or three conflict cards while we were going around with the goods. And I was like, is he going to Moiter me? Because I can't win if he does. If he Moitered, I'm just completely boned. But he didn't. He mated, and we made out like bandits.
Yep. It's a real tough call because, you know, if you mate and you win, you can score big by helping the captain. Just like if you cabin boy and the Moiterer wins, you're basically, you know, the captain and the Moiterer are the big two. Because if you're the Moiterer and you win, you become the captain. And if you're the captain, you're pretty much in charge of everything. And you bring the boat to places, and you get points for bringing the boat around. You don't have to do anything. Everyone else can trade goods to get points, but the big way to get points is to captain the ship. But if you are the Moiterer, you can become the captain by kicking the captain's ass. Now, it really kind of sucks if it's a four-player game and only the captain and the Moiterer really have the ways to score big points. So they put in the captain and the mate, I mean the mate and the cabin boy. Basically, you can choose sides. And if your side wins, you score big. But if your side loses, wow, you got screwed.
Yeah.
Because you could have taken the neutral roles of Loadmeister or Handler and probably gotten more points than picking the losing side.
It's a really good game.
It's really good.
And it's got two more things going for it. One, since it's a cardboard game, it's super portable. You just carry it in your pocket.
Yep. It was only $8.
And two, which is probably more important to me, it's a really quick game.
I was surprised how quick it was. I thought it would be longer, but it only took us like 10, 15 minutes, something like that. It was pretty short.
Yeah, we could just blow through those. We could just blow through round after round after round without even blinking.
Yeah, it's really good. The problem is it's in German, but there's good English rules online. And
plus,
once
luckily,
you play it a few times, you don't need the rules anymore.
English and German are very similar in many ways, and you can usually figure out what the cards mean just by looking at them.
I'm actually thinking I'm having more fun playing the games written in German, saying the funny German words.
Yeah, mate, or the frost hole, the piraten den.
The piraten nest.
Nest.
What's
the thing happening where it's like Jiggen Schiffel or something long?
The Jiggen Schaffel something?
Something long in German. Yeah. Means cabin boy.
Yeah. Sometimes you want to use the English word. I don't want to say the German word for cabin boy.
No.
But I do like to say Moiterer.
And Leidenmeister.
Loademeister.
No, it's Leidenmeister.
Whatever.
There's an A there. There's no O anywhere in that word.
I like saying load better.
It's not. It's laid.
Well,
maybe
it's
not pronounced Laid, but there's no O there.
Doesn't matter. He's the load. In English, he's the loader.
He's the load master.
Yeah,
you know,
anyway.
Meister.
Load meister.
Way to go. German for the win.
For the win. Over the weekend here, my friend came over. He had Nanostray for the DS, which I kind of wanted to play for a while because it's a space shooty game, and I like space shooty games. But I didn't really want to pay for it because I heard it wasn't the perfect game. But I borrowed it for like a few minutes, and I beat it overnight. I basically played a little before I went to bed, and a little when I woke up, and then I beat it.
Great.
It really, I can't say it's worth money, but if you can play it for free, why not?
So it's like Polarium.
Kind of like Polarium, yeah. I'd say it's equal in quality.
Because I got all I was ever going to get out of Polarium from when we went to the Nintendo World Store grand opening in the city. Mm-hmm. They had Polarium there. On a little, like, DS kiosk. So I went into that DS kiosk, and I told it to play multiplayer. I downloaded the demo from it, and I played the demo on the train home.
Yep.
And then that was all I got out of that game. The game wasn't worth any amount of money beyond that.
Yeah. Well, Nanostray, the problem I really had with it was that it could have been a great space shooty game. It fell just short in every area, which made it kind of crummy overall.
Great.
So the way it works is the one first problem. Weapon selection via touchscreen. Very, very bad. You could have used the R button for weapon selection and L to go back, but R and L didn't do anything in this game as far as I could tell.
Yeah, it seems a lot of the earlier DS games use the touchscreen in ways that you just, why bother?
Yeah. All right, number two is it's kind of 3D-ish, which is all right. That's cool. You know, you're on the bottom, you're flying up like Galaga or Raptor Call of the Shadows, but you're only on the top screen. If they would have made this actually just two screens and there are bad guys coming down from the top screen to the bottom screen, or you could fly the ship from screen to screen, or, you know, just a long space shooty game instead of one that was stuck in this little half you know, of the DS screens, that would have made the game tremendously better.
So you're basically, this is a game that could have come out on the GBA.
Yeah, it could have come out in, well, no, because it was 3D-ish.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, it's you. There are four weapons. There's blue, which is just shoot forward. There's green, which is shoot to the both sides. There's red, which is these kind of homing things. It's like lasers, and they bend a little bit towards bad guys.
Ah.
And the fourth weapon is lightning. And the lightning shoots straight forward, but if it hits something, it kind of grabs onto it. So you can fly off in a different direction, and you'll still be doing damage to whatever you hit. And you have infinity of those four weapons. You also have this energy meter, and whenever you push B, you shoot like a special weapon depending on which weapon you have selected. So if you have the blue weapon out, you'll shoot like a strong blue beam forward as long as you hold B down, and your energy meter depletes. If you have the lasers, you'll shoot these big homing missile things around, you know, all that kind
of
stuff.
Huh. See, I was never much of a fan of shmups.
Yeah.
My favorite ones ever are still R-Type for the SNES.
R-Type is great.
Yeah, and Raptor Call of the Shadows.
Gradius. Gradius is great.
Gradius 3 was all right. It's the only one I ever really played.
I like the Dariuses. I like lots of space shooties.
I liked Raiden.
Raiden's very good.
I liked it in the arcade.
Yeah, definitely the best arcade one's Raiden.
I don't like Ikaruga. That game is just beyond the amount of effort.
I like it. It's just really hard.
It's beyond the amount of effort I would ever put into a video game ever.
Yeah. I do have to say the one thing about Nanostray that made it really terrible, that if they would have fixed this, I would have been willing to pay like $5 for it, was that you couldn't, like normally, you can fly to the anywhere on the screen. You use the arrows and you move. In Nanostray, like you can't fly to the corners. Like there would be items on screen in the corner and like the ship wouldn't go there.
Ah!
It was just really kind of painful to I don't know what they were thinking. Hopefully someone in the future will release like a really, really good space shooty for the DS.
I want a really good space shooty for the DS that has wireless multiplayer.
Yeah, two people at once or two people against each other.
Yeah, against or co-op or racing each other. There's so much you could do.
Yeah.
Like Castlevania actually has.
And you have to use both screens.
Yeah.
Definitely.
You don't need to use the touchscreen. Developers, get it in your heads. The touchscreen's there if you want it. You don't have to use it.
Yep.
The microphone's there if you want it. You don't have to make every game have some stupid blow-into-me thing.
Only use it if it makes sense. I mean, it makes sense for Nintendogs.
Yes, it does. I call for my little dog and it comes over.
It makes sense for Advance Wars to use the touchscreen.
Yep. Doesn't make sense to use the microphone to blow up a bomb in Bomberman.
No, it doesn't. It would make sense if there was like a mini game like defuse the bomb and you're trying to blow out the fuse.
Yeah, but no, they didn't do that.
No, they didn't do that. They made it stupid. All right.
Yeah, so it was Tuesday, so at least we got The Escapist.
Oh, The Escapist. Better than every print video game magazine there is.
Yeah, though the thing is, I read all but one of the articles, and I didn't like any of them, but apparently Scott says the one I didn't read is actually a good one.
Well, you know, the past two Escapists didn't really live up to the former glory. I can't believe I'm talking about former glory of a magazine that's only like 20-something issues old.
23, this one is.
But because some early Escapists were just damn good.
Yeah, the first two, I was just amazed. Like, wow,
yeah.
I would pay money for this.
Yeah. They got some. This one, actually, the ads were very nice.
Yeah, I saw the Child's Play ad.
Yeah, and no other ads, which was very nice. So the one article in there that I want to talk about was about these guys who collect, like, ultra-rare, unreleased video game stuff.
God, this article read, like imagine say you're part of some sort of, like, indie subculture, like a creepy, hidden kind of subculture that's not very big. And someone decides they're going to write an article about you, and the only source they use is you talking about yourself and how awesome you are.
And then they write it as if you were, like, glorifying you as, like, this great ancient master of amazingness who should be revered.
Like, this article was kind of painful to read.
Especially because just knowing that people like this exist is always painful. Because, really, these are the people that I don't like.
Basically, they're people who collect old, like, unreleased games that you can get. Like a copy of a game that was never released for whatever reason, and this is, like, the demo or the almost finished version or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And these people seem to have this stupid subculture thing where they'll all trade with each other, but they have this code of ethics where you're never allowed to, like, publish the game on the internet or give it to the heathens who don't want to understand it or talk about it or anything.
Yeah, it's like I used to know people, like, in the early days of RIT when anime still wasn't digital yet.
Yeah, like,
and
I mean, for all you who love digital fan subs, those are so recent. Like, those are a brand new thing. And when I was a kid, yeah, get off my lawn, you damn kids.
Used to send blank VHS tapes to guys who would make you a copy and then send it back to you.
And there was this whole code system of, like, what generation the tape was and how good the subtitles were. Like, if you got a master, that was, like, the holy grail of a fan sub. That meant someone had the Laserdisc from Japan, and they used a Genlock to tape that to a VHS tape or an SVHS tape and put the subtitles in manually with this box.
Mm-hmm.
That was, like, worship.
Yep, that was, like, the great... But anyway, there were people in those days who would, like, make an anime music video and then not share it because they wanted to keep it to themselves.
They'd trade it to their other friend for a music video he made. And then they talk about how elite and awesome they were because they had these rare things that no one else in the world had.
Or, like, they would get a new anime from Japan and they would subtitle it so that it could be watched, but they wouldn't give it to you unless you gave them a copy of a subtitled anime that no one else had.
And if you gave something to someone else, they'd never talk to you again.
Yep. It's like... They just feel good having things that no one else has, not, you know, caring about, you know, the many, many people who they're keeping information from.
Yeah, I don't care about the enjoyment they get or whatever. People are allowed to enjoy whatever they want. I'm fine with it. But philosophically, it bothers me when anyone would ever deign to either A, destroy information,
mm-hmm.
or B, hide information.
Yep.
I see those as just like, I'm not religious, I don't believe in gods that'll send me to hell or whatever, but that's pretty much as close to a sin as you can get with me.
Mm-hmm.
Destroying information is not cool.
Definitely. I mean, it's bad enough that the game companies, like, abandoned these rare games, things like Missile Command 2 and, you know, like 3DO games that, you know, were canceled when the system died. Or
yeah, there's a whole bunch listed in the article.
Dev kits for Atari Jaguars that don't exist anymore.
Jaguar?
Yeah. It's bad enough that the companies tried to get rid of these things when, you know, they finished their company business.
But if you find it and you decide specifically to prevent other people from seeing it.
I mean, think about what could happen if, you know, I mean, sure, okay. There is copyright law. You're not allowed to give these things up. You could get in trouble.
You know what? There's a lot of ways to distribute things anonymously.
Yeah, if you really cared and you really wanted to do good, you would get these things out on the net. I mean, the other thing is okay, Eve, no matter how much assholes and how stupid these people are for keeping these games to themselves and denying a lot of people a lot of enjoyment by sharing them, which is what they should do, how come the game companies who legally own them aren't taking advantage of it? I mean, they have a thing. It could make them a lot of money with very little effort. And they just hold on to it. They don't do anything with it.
I don't think they know that there's a market for these games.
I think they know. I think they're just assholes.
Now, no company, except for Fox with their Firefly debacle, is going to willfully deny themselves profit for no good reason.
All they have to do, seriously, is make a site and say, Rare ROMs downloads $1, and make a little system where if someone pays $1 on their credit card, they can download a rare ROM of, you know, a dev kit for an NES or a game that didn't get made or a broken MAME ROM of an arcade game that was destroyed or some rare game that was only released in one store in Japan. I mean, one of the things they talked about was the cartridges used for the NES World Championships that are going for like $6,000 on eBay.
Just dump the ROM and then we can all play it and enjoy it.
I think you can actually get a ROM of that one, but, you know, similar things. You know, like the Atari Adventure, like Quest for the, you know, what was it, the cup? And
Quest to Avoid That Duck?
Yeah, Quest to Avoid the Duck. When they had the contest to win, like, you know, the chalice and the sword and the whatever it was. And only the guy who won the chalice still has it and everyone else, who knows. There's a story about it somewhere. But,
wow, you know, that was probably as vague as you could ever be.
If people know what I'm talking about, they know what I'm talking about.
I barely know what you're talking about.
Well, I'll show it to you later. But anyway, there was a thing with Atari Adventure way back in the day where if you did really good at Adventure and you found clues, that you would go somewhere and you would play Adventure, and whoever found the clues fast enough and solved it fast enough would win, like, these golden, like, amazing things. And they had, like, they were going to have, like, four or five of them, and then whoever won the final one would get, like, this crazy sword. And they ended up only having, like, two or three of them. And then they canceled it, and no one knows what happened to the things, and, you know, it's kind of weird, and it's like a mystery, it's a cool video game history thing. But the cartridges they used for those are like these special versions of Adventure. And, you know, those are the kind of rare things that need to be out. You know, people want to play that. They want to see what it was. Instead, it's like this complete secret mystery. It shouldn't be.
Yeah, information wants to be free.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a cliche. You hear it yelled on Slashdot all the time. But you know what? It's true.
And, you know, you think, okay.
In the very least, information wants to exist.
Yep. And you might think, all right, well, they're actually trying to make more money this way, because the longer they hold on to the information and the later they release it, it'll be worth more money then, and they can get more money for it.
But no, it's worth less.
It's worth less because then people forget about it. You know, as soon you got to put it out quick to get the money before, you know. I mean, how many people remember this shit now? In 10 years, no one's going to remember or care about it.
Like, imagine if you had a copy of, like, Kid Icarus version 2 for the NES.
Whoa.
I don't think that even exists.
I don't think so either.
But let's say it did, and you had it, and you could play it. All right. Great. A lot of people who live are alive today would pay a lot of money for the privilege of playing that.
Mm-hmm.
20 years from now, no one's going to remember who Kid Icarus was. It was a mediocre Metroid-like game from a long time ago that just didn't really do very well.
See, the thing is, in 20 years, there might be just one guy who cares about it, and he'll pay a freaking fortune. But I contend...
No, because the one guy who cares already has his one copy that he's hiding from everyone in his mom's basement.
Like, one of the things they were talking about was that they might have some kind of copy of, like, Mother 3.
Yeah, I saw that. I was kind of dubious of that claim altogether.
That they can't get to work, or they might be able to get to work if they can find some rare hardware. And these guys are working together to be able to play it. But there are people who've been waiting for that kind of game for ages and ages and ages and ages. And it's really not fair for you to just, like, hold on to that and play it and not share.
Yep, and for those who don't know, Mother is Earthbound.
Yeah, Earthbound. So it's basically Earthbound 2, which people have been clamoring for more Earthbound
for
years.
Be Earthbound 3, because there's Earthbound for the NES that wasn't released in the U.S.
Yeah, but Earthbound is actually the name of the SNES. It's a Final Fantasy type numbering thing where it's all messed up.
Yeah, there's 1 and 2. 1 was for the NES. It was never released here. 2 was released, and it was called Earthbound instead of Mother.
Mm-hmm.
If you haven't played them and you like RPGs, these are probably the longest and probably, they're definitely in the top 10 of old school RPGs.
Even if you don't like RPGs, it's so great because when the enemies are like the random encounters, at a certain point you're powerful enough and you just automatically win. It's great.
Yeah.
It's not like painful like some of the other ones.
And there's a lot of old school Nintendo type humor.
Oh my god, there's more just wacky humor in there than you can imagine.
Like, if you like the humor in Paper Mario or Mario RPG, you'll freaking love Earthbound.
Oh yeah, this is exactly the same kind of crap.
I mean, enemies include, like, moving lamps and dirty hippies.
I love the first, part where you go to the arcade and there's the bad kids there and you beat them up and there's, like, a pinball machine. And
my favorite part was with the cultists.
The cultists.
The cultists.
Cultists.
So that's about all we have for today. We had more, but we've been talking a long time. We don't want to make the podcast go too long.
Nope.
But just a few little meta bits. One, the forums are exploding again.
Mainly because of our yesterday's podcast where we said that you're pretty much dumb if you buy a computer more than $400.
Yeah.
People didn't like that. And
keep it coming. And if you haven't joined the forums yet, join the forums. Go to the website. The community is growing at a pretty good clip.
Yeah, I might get rid of comments on the front page and just limit it to forums. So if you want to talk about something, try to stick to the forums. Maybe I'm going to try to make it so that each thing on the front page has a link that goes into the forums to the associated discussion.
Yeah, because honestly, we love that you guys want to comment, but on the front page, we were thinking now we want to use the comments more for stuff about that episode, like Scott was sick, or here's a clarification on a point.
Yeah,
stuff
it's
like
very
that.
Hard to have a discussion in the comments in the front page blog area because it's not threaded or anything.
Yeah.
And in the forums, it's much easier for people to check and for everything to stay organized. You know, in the blog comments, it doesn't really work so well for discussion. So I might close it or limit it. So everyone sign up for the forums. I know they might not be the forums you're used to, but they're actually really cool.
Yeah, once you get used to them, they're great.
Everyone seems to like it. you know, I was kind of unsure of it at first, but no one's complained. So that's way cool. And remember, we're still looking for more feedback.
And if you send us audio feedback, since we haven't gotten any yet, you're fairly likely to be on our show at some point.
Yeah, so either send an attachment or a link to an audio file to geeknights@gmail.com, or you can call our phone number, 206-333-1537, and record a voicemail, and I will get that voicemail and be able to play it on the podcast.
All right. So, we out.
Peace.
Hey.
And that was Geek Nights with Rim and Scott. Special thanks to DJ Pretzel for the opening music.
Thanks for listening. Please remember to point your favorite podcatcher at feeds.feedburner.com/geeknights to get the latest episodes as soon as they're released. Also, please visit our website at www.frontrowcrew.com for the latest updates and forum discussion. And whether you love or hate our podcast, we won't know unless you send your feedback to us at geeknights@gmail.com.